The best in internet talk radio.
A mind-bendingly ingenious plan to control the universe.
We're building the best internet talk radio on the planet. TalkZone.com. Susan Frank talks to the animals and you. It's Wild About Pets on TalkZone.com.
Welcome back to the show with the traveling world of reptiles. We're talking today about many, many different reptiles that we have in the studio. If you'd like to see some photographs of the animals, click the purple Look While You Listen button that you see on the Talk Zone show homepage. Make sure you're looking at the player window because we're live today with cameras. And we've got some of the reptiles here. We also have the phone lines open if you'd like to call in and ask a question. It's 888-463-6748. Come on, I know you want to call. That's 1-888. Go for it. And we were just talking about giving clues for another animal coming in. And so we're going to see this next animal. We'll set it down on the table. Ah, Chris, what do we have here?
That is an American alligator from the areas that we were talking about earlier that Dave was giving clues for. They are found in 10 southern states of the U.S., only found in the United States. American alligators are the second largest reptile on the planet. They can be upwards of 15 feet and upwards of 1,000 pounds.
Oh, is this a male or female?
This is a male.
Oh, he's gorgeous. And I love seeing
this. Don't kiss him.
Okay, I promise I won't kiss him. And I don't know, Dave, if you'll be able to, if you want to lift him higher and have him, you know, look into the camera a little bit. Okay, wonderful. Chris, now I understand that, you know, you are a full-time employee of the traveling world of reptiles, and you go out and you perform your own shows and sometimes accompany Dave on the shows. What I do wonder from you is, since you're handling these animals on a daily basis, what are some of the key points you'd want to make about what it takes to keep a good relationship with these reptiles?
I think the biggest problem that people have with reptiles and maybe any animals for that matter is the relationship part of it, because I think sometimes people just become too comfortable with these animals and they just see them every day and they kind of lose that idea that these are still wild animals, whether it be a small snake or a big one or an alligator or anything like that. People just assume that they are going to act the same every day and they'll lose their wild instincts. And you can never, never trust any of these animals for any reason, whether you have a small pet lizard or a giant snake or anything like that. Those animals are wild animals, and they need to be treated as such.
Thank you. That's a very important point. These are not domesticated animals like our dogs, our cats, our hamsters. They are wild animals.
Yep.
Okay, well, let's put the mic back over to Dave. And Dave, is there... what would you say about this American alligator? Is this an animal that you see people have as pets? And is this a recommended animal to be a pet or not?
Well, first of all, it's 100% illegal to have an alligator or any crocodilian as a pet. And you don't get a second chance with an alligator. And what I mean by that is if that thing grabs your finger at that size or bigger, it is going to remove it. You're in huge trouble if you... are caught owning an alligator, you know, usually they're going to confiscate it and they're going to give you a fine, but if somebody gets injured, you know, it's just a complete embarrassment, obviously. Department of Agriculture is going to come, they're going to confiscate it from you, but, you know, you don't... See, we are able to get licensing because we do what we do for a living, so it's not an issue, but I go and see people's, you know, people that have reptiles, I see that they have them illegally all the time. It's very difficult to regulate the trade of animals, and you can pretty much get one anywhere. So even though it's illegal, most people ignore the law and have them anyway. So not a good idea. They might be harmless when they're babies, but once they get 2, 3, 4 feet, you get bit, forget about it. You're in trouble. You're going to lose a finger.
So in a sense, you do have some kind of licensing, or maybe that's the wrong word.
No, it's licensing. You need licensing, absolutely.
To have this alligator. Because obviously I'm thinking, obviously as you are going to the different events and people see you with the animals, mm-hmm. when you are saying, now these are not, you know, animals that we really recommend for pets, no doubt people must say, but wait a minute, you have them. Mm-hmm. And how do you respond mostly?
Well, I tell them, you know, unless you do what I do for a living or you own some kind of a zoo or place where you're going to open up an exhibit, you know, first you have to apply. They have to come out. They have to approve. and make sure that you're doing everything correctly. And that's how you go about, you know, getting the permits, but they can deny them too. So, like I said, you get on the internet, you can get anything you want. That's the unfortunate part about it. So, we choose to do it right. We do, you know, all these shows every year. We obviously have to. You know, you can't just decide to open up a business with an alligator and you know, pull it off without having licensing. It's impossible.
Okay, so let's go on to another one now. For those of you who are maybe looking at the pictures, try not to peek and look ahead because it's more fun to listen to the clues. So let's see another animal.
Bring out another big guy, I think. Let's bring out, this one's from Tanzania, Africa. If Chris can hear me, hopefully he's going to get out the right animal here. This guy right here can reach lengths of about 6 feet, weigh anywhere from 50 to 70 pounds. It's been a big part of my show for many years now, and one of the sweetest animals that I've raised from the time it was a little hatching. It literally fit in the palm of my hand 2.5 years ago, and we're going to put that guy right up on the table, too. Come on in, Chris. There we go. This is an African black throat monitor lizard.
Ooh, it
is
can I touch it?
Yep. Feels a lot different than the snake. It feels almost like a beaded purse. But
oh, yes. In fact, my audience here today, would either of you gentlemen like to come around and come around the back of our animal? And you said this is what kind of animal?
It's called an African black throat monitor lizard. It gets that. It's actually a subspecies of the savannah monitor, cousin of the Komodo dragon, one of the larger lizards on the planet.
Okay, and then, Dave, maybe you can give instructions for how...
Sure. You know what? I basically tell you, pet it wherever you want. Go ahead. Now, you'll see the tongue. I mean, it has a huge tongue. Scientists believe that this thing can smell food from several miles away. They're big-time carrion eaters. I'm talking about monitors in general. They eat a lot of dead animals. They can smell those animals from a great distance. They're colored like this because they want to kind of look like the sand and the dirt that they rest on. And also they have these spots. Those spots kind of break up the outline of the body. Actually looks like the splashes of sunlight that filters through the leaves hitting the ground.
Oh, yes, wonderful camouflage.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, let's see. And now I know you give these animals names for your usage, and I have them included on our website.
Mm-hmm.
And what is this black throat monitor's name?
I call her Zany because they're native to Tanzania, Africa. So I gave it the name Zany. We try to think sometimes it doesn't work out, but we try to give them unique names. You know, another interesting thing about this monitor is it is one of the only species of animal that can eat a venomous snake, get bit by it, and not have anything to worry about because it's immune to snake venom. People out in Africa absolutely love these lizards, particularly people who are growing food on the farms. It's a big problem. There's a high incidence of bites from cobras and puff adders and black mambas. They love to release these things or find them in their fields because they control a lot of the venomous snake numbers, and it actually reduces the amount of people who are bitten every year by the venomous snakes. And they obviously, some of those countries don't have the medical facilities and the technology and the anti-venoms that we would have over here. And if you're bit, it's pretty much a death sentence. So it's a good thing to have these things out in the wild controlling venomous snake numbers. You don't want to get rid of them all, but it helps control their numbers, which is a good thing.
Well, thank you for that, because, you know, we mentioned some of the beneficial aspects of reptiles. Why is it that you think people, besides they're not the soft, furry animals, do you have any of your own theories or feelings, Dave, on why it is that often people have a resistance to reptiles?
Now, when you say resistance, do you mean why they would fear them? Or why
why there's that initial, I don't care for them, I don't want anything to do with them, keep me away from them.
Well, you know, they're just like you said, they're not cute, they're not cuddly, they're not furry. Some of them are venomous, some of them are downright dangerous. Mm-hmm. I have had people, and in fact this happened 2 days ago, where I showed up at this daycare, it was actually a preschool, and one of the directors came up to me and guided me to the room where I was going, and she told me that one of the women took the day off because she didn't want to be in the same building with the animals. I've heard people won't look at a picture of them.
I know.
Let alone, you know, pet one or want one as a pet. So, and I understand, you know, I mean, a lot of that stuff is kind of unfounded. I mean, a lot of the fears about these animals aren't necessarily true. But you know what? How do you convince somebody not to be afraid of something?
Oh, hey, Dave, is Zany a female or male?
This is a female.
She was looking at me. Okay, I'm imagining this. But, you know, she had her head tilted, and I could see one eye kind of looking over in my direction. Of course, now she's shifted her head a little bit, but still her eye is kind of interested. I think she's lovely. I love her coloration, and she feels kind of bumpy.
I say like a beaded purse. It almost feels like the bottom of a swimming pool if you've ever, you know,
above ground pools.
Now, just real quick, what you mentioned is it turned its head. That is because the eyes are positioned where our ears would be. And so it can't see you unless it turns its head in your direction, but it doesn't necessarily have to look straight at you. It just has to look to the side.
Is it okay if she...
Oh, yeah, she's just moving. I can hold her tail and kind of let her treadmill across.
And if she wants to taste me, she can?
Sure.
I love that. It was just like, what does it feel like? I don't know. It's just like the lightest little touch, very soft.
Like a feather, yep.
Yes. Yes. Oh, she's wonderful. Oh, she can't get any traction.
No, that's a good thing, though. When you're doing an interview, you don't want her to get any traction.
Oh, I like her very much. All right. Well, let's move on to another one.
All righty.
She's taking my papers, everybody. She wants to be the next interviewer.
There you go.
Okay. So who are we going to meet next?
Okay. I think we're going to bring out our first species that's native to right here in Illinois. This is you're going to know right away why this makes a terrible pet. I don't want to, without giving it away, this one will get about 40 to 50 pounds. Like I said, you can find one in your own backyard if you reside here in Illinois, among other places in the Midwest. There's only two species found in on the planet, and I'm going to let Chris pick this thing up if he can. This is one of the more difficult ones to bring out. Here we go.
Ah, yes.
Now, I'm going to move my cord here because he will sever it with no issues. This is a common snapping turtle.
I used to work at a nature center in Itasca, and we had marshlands out there, and we would often see snapping turtles in the ponds and around the marshes.
Right. Now, a lot of people have posed this question to me. Why don't we just eliminate them, find them in all the parts? If you find one, just kill it. All they do is butt. First of all, if you are swimming in a lake, you are absolutely positively swimming with snapping turtles. But then I pose this question to you, have you ever been bitten by one? And
no.
The answer is always no. They're not interested in your toes or your fingers. People who get bit by them are people who have them as pets or deliberately pick them up in the wild. And I would say to people, these are extremely important because they're kind of like the cleanup crews in nature. They are the first ones on the scene when an animal is dead in the water, whether it be a fish or a bird or whatever it is that falls in the water, drowns. They clean it up. They don't allow it to rot and dirty the water and pollute the water. And another interesting thing, down in Florida, maybe a decade or so ago, there was a plane crash, a value jet plane crash, it happened in the middle of a swamp, and there is actually a turtle patrol that the police use to help recover the bodies, because it's literally impossible for a scuba diver to get in all that muck and dirt, so they tie chains to the snapping turtles, they put them in the water, they follow the chains down a few hours later, and they recovered numerous bodies and allowed people to bury their loved ones. So, I mean, just for that alone, how cool is that to want to protect them? So they benefit man and they benefit the environment.
I never knew that. I've done shows on the rescue and recovery dogs, no doubt, but I didn't know they were recovery turtles.
Recovery turtles do the same thing that the canine unit would do to find somebody, whether it be in a forest preserve or somebody hiding in a building that's burglarizing it. Same idea, but they do it in the water, something a dog and a mammal can't do.
So do you find that people do try and keep these as pets?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the more dangerous, to some people, the cooler it is. Chris and I, 2 years ago, we got a call from one of the wildlife, I think it was Lake County Wildlife Control, and somebody had an Egyptian cobra, and we ended up getting it and finding it a home for a guy who was licensed to own, venomous snakes, but this is an animal that can bite you. There's no anti-venom close at hand, and here in Illinois, and unless you got it from a zoo, which would, hit or miss whether they keep that species here at the zoo at Brookfield or Lincoln Park. So, the cooler and more dangerous it is, sometimes that influences people to have them because they just kind of, it's an ego thing or something like that.
Well, I suppose you have this experience yourself. I came and watched your show when you were at a library. And so you're up there with these amazingly fascinating and cool looking creatures. And I'm sure children who have a great affinity, I believe, for reptiles see you and they say, oh, these animals are cool. And they watch you and Chris and they probably think you guys are cool. I would think it would be natural for them to want to be you and want to have these animals. And so what, again, would you say to that child who says, but I want to be you, so I'm going to convince and beg my parents to get one of these animals?
Mm-hmm. Oh, we don't, there's not a 10-minute span that goes by during the show where we don't constantly remind that the kids that these animals are not good pets for the most part. There's very few reptiles in the pet trade that are good for, let's say, an 8-year-old child or younger. There just isn't. But there are a few. We'll recommend a leopard gecko or a bearded dragon, something like that. But ultimately, it's up to the pet owner. That's what makes a pet a good pet, the pet owner. I mean, you can get the sweetest little pet on the planet, and if you don't take care of it, it's going to wilt away and die. So, you know, any of the dangerous animals, we make it well known that they are terrible pets.
I do want to call attention to a couple articles I have that is after the photographs on my webpage that is on wildaboutpets.net, and this is the page of photographs. There is a little quiz called, Hey Kids, Are You Hoping to Get a Reptile Pet? There's a little test to find out if you are reptile ready, and it's really designed for you to think about some questions that really are involved in what it would take to care for a reptile. Obviously, as Dave said, and I'm not here to tell anyone to have a pet or not, we're trying to make recommendations for which animals, you know, could make sense if you did really want a reptile, but most important, are you really prepared? Do you know what you're getting involved with? So first there's this little test for the children, and then for parents or spouses or partners or adults who have someone who wants to have a reptile like a child. There is a great article written by Melissa Kaplan. I highly recommend you read this. It's very straightforward, very explicit, and it gives you much to think about. And so after your child, you know, takes this little reptile-ready test and comes to you and says, okay, I think I could handle it, you and your children need to sit down and talk about some of the information that you will see in this article. Let's move along.
All right. You know, I think we're going to bring out the most commonly encountered, one of the most commonly encountered pet reptiles in the pet trade. And this is one reptile that I feel particularly bad for, because usually when they're purchased as hatchlings, they're just in 6 months, they wilt away and they die. but there's a number of reasons why I wouldn't recommend them. Even if you are able to keep it alive, it is, there's many, many reasons why I would tell somebody to go in a different direction if they're thinking about having a pet reptile. And I'm going to wait for Chris to bring it out here, but they're great in our show, and that is because we have the time to pick them up. You know what I tell children? I tell them that you're in school from roughly 8 in the morning till 3 in the afternoon, and I don't see how it's possible for you to pay attention to an animal that can grow to 6 feet. They have the, now, if in case you haven't noticed what animal here is sitting here on the table, this is a green iguana.
Ah, yes.
Native to South and Central America and Mexico. Now, if you look, you'll see a lot of, I guess I'll call them spikes on the back, on the tail. They have sharp claws. They have a very powerful jaw, which is basically designed for gripping onto slippery fruits and vegetables in the rainforest trees, but an aggressive one can be used to defend itself, which means bite you.
Ah.
Not good. Not good to get bit by a big iguana like this.
No, let's see if maybe we can position it up towards the camera that's in front of you.
Now, they're arboreal, and that is exactly why they are green and brown. The brown stripes on the body and tail break up the outline of the body. Many, many predators that would love to eat iguanas, including birds of prey. There's things that can climb up the trees and grab them, whether it be a cat. The only time they ever leave the trees is basically to lay eggs. They are, don't have to drink from the rivers or any of the bodies of water below. They get mostly all their hydration from the leaves that they eat. They are complete vegetarians at this size. When they're younger, they'll take insects, but at this size, it's basically leaves, flowers, fruits. And you can imitate that diet in the wild, I should say in captivity, by giving them, you know, things that you would eat in a salad. But you have to be careful because they do have a specific diet, and there are certain things that are not good for them, such as broccoli, kale, what else is there? Spinach is very bad for them. So you have to do your homework. You can't just buy a bag of leafy greens, throw it in there, and think that you're doing the right thing. It takes a very large enclosure with a climbing area. You also have to pay attention to the humidity, to the temperature.
Take a look for a second, Dave, because I have photographs of some of your what you call residences, and I love these. Are these in your home, or where are these located?
Well, you know what? We recently have a facility now, so I would love to keep them all at home. It would make it much easier for me, but not anymore. And if you look at those photos, we are missing all of the climbing branches and hide boxes in there. That was just so that you can kind of get a visual of what the enclosure looks like without all the clutter. So if you zoomed in on that, you would see that it just looks like a big empty enclosure when, in fact, there are climbing branches and there are hide boxes. There's even specific equipment in there that provides humidity, heat lights, heat rocks, all kinds of stuff to mimic the animal's wild environment.
And what you're saying is what I understand is where so many people have problems. I can't tell you how many people have come to me and people that have had the discussion that they found these cute little iguanas in the pet stores. As you said, the green iguana is one of the most common ones they can find. It's cute. Mm-hmm. It's amazing. They take it home. It's starting to grow. It starts getting sick, and they have no idea why it's getting sick, how to care for it, and again, I hear they get released or they're given away. And I think that's so sad for a couple of reasons. First of all, no child wants to watch an animal that clearly they want and love, mm-hmm. Do so poorly.
Right.
It must be a terrible experience for the child. It's terrible for the parents. Mm-hmm. And of course, that is the worst thing that could happen to this creature.
Yep.
So what are we really saying then about iguanas, since they are so common? What's the answer, Dave? Because I think, face it, people are going to still want these animals. So what must someone do, Dave, or where should they go to really find out what they've got to do to be a responsible iguana owner?
Well, I'll tell you what. First, and just real quick, getting back to one of your points, it's actually more expensive to take an animal like this to the vet and treat it than it is to just let it die and then replace it.
Oh.
Which, unfortunately, for some people,
sad.
Is the solution. But, that's why Chris and myself do what we do. We try to educate people and let them know that if you do purchase an iguana, you better have a huge enclosure. You better know its diet. You better know that you're going to have to look after the temperature and the environment, because if that fluctuates up or down, it can mean the end of the iguana. It's just not a good pet, and the best we can do is just give that word to people, spread the word that they're not good pets, because it's really impossible. How do you, unless they banned them from being sold, there's really nothing you can do. People are going to take an interest to them, and they're going to buy one if they want one. So educate, educate, educate. That's what we try to do.
And Dave, though, I, having been in environmental education for my career, and you no doubt, for so many years have worked with animals, we know that as humans we want so to interact with other life forms, mm-hmm. and we love non-human species, and we want to be around them, and we want to feed them, and we want to love them, and we covet that interaction with animals. So what is the answer, since you and I are both on this show really trying to have people take a hard look at maybe it's not such a great idea to own some of these reptiles? What can we do then to fulfill that need that we have?
Get a pet rock? I don't know.
That's I a, had know, one as a yeah. child. I loved my pet rock. But okay, I know the
no,
people
I
listening that will not do.
Right. That's up to the individual. That's a difficult question for me to answer, because I can't answer for everybody else. But I guess all I can tell you is that if you do not have experience with these animals, take my word for it, take Chris's word for it, you might end up regretting it when you get an animal like this. So, I don't know. It's really, if you don't have the time, if you are in school, like a lot of the kids are at the elementary level, where they're gone from 8 in the morning to 3 in the afternoon. I mean, think about how are you going to take care of it? How are you going to handle it where you're going to get it accustomed to you, where it's not going to be aggressive? Where are you going to find the time to feed it? Because, they get home from school, then they have homework, then they might have a sporting event or a scout meet, then they do, or then they go to bed and get up in the morning, they do it all over again 5 days a week, 9 months out of the school year.
Mm-hmm. So. Can I pet?
Sure, absolutely. This one feels like a screen on the window. Some people tell me it feels like the bumps on a basketball. One little boy at a library, very funny story, pet the iguana. He fell on the floor laughing. I looked at him. I said, "Why are you laughing?" He looked at me and said, "I'm laughing because your iguana feels almost exactly like my grandma." That was kind of funny.
Gentlemen, Bill or Michael, if you want to come around and have a chance to pet. Oh, now this is, what's this iguana's name?
This is Rex.
Rex.
We have three different iguanas, but this one happens to be Chris's iguana, and this is Rex.
Rex just shut his eyes, and I know with some animals, mm-hmm. they find it soothing.
It is. That is a soothing thing. It's not, the scales are made up of keratin, the same stuff your fingernails are made up of, so they don't have the nerve endings on the outside of their body like we would on our skin, but it seems to somehow soothe them where they enjoy it, because every time you pet the iguana, it will close its eyes.
Oh, and we're doing something right.
Mm-hmm. And this one is about 6 years old. was maybe 10 inches from the tip of its snout to the end of its tail. So they grow quickly. If you keep them in a big enclosure and you feed them right, they grow, and they grow fast.
Dave, when you and I were talking before our interview here, and we were discussing the issue of, well, what can people do? What can children do if they're not going to own? You mentioned something that I thought was a good suggestion, mm-hmm. to try and come to see people like you, that this is your profession, this mm-hmm. is your career. And I suppose the answer might be for other children to become vets mm-hmm. or go into zoos and maybe learn to do what you're doing, which we know takes a lot of time, a lot of money, a lot of research, a lot of expertise. Mm-hmm. And I know it's a poor second, but watching the films on television, you know, the show Life right now on mm-hmm. the Discovery
awesome,
Channel.
Awesome show.
It is. And, you know, I think it's really fulfilling a need, and it's showing us things about the animals on this planet that we never knew about. And I know it doesn't really make up for the real life experience, but isn't the idea of this animal's welfare more important, perhaps?
Right. And, you know, when I was speaking with you before the show, I remember telling you that there's too many programs now that are dedicated to showing animals attacking people. And the problem I have with that is they don't give you the statistics. When children watch these shows, they're easily influenced. They believe every time they go in the water, they're going to get eaten by a shark. Every time they go camping, a bear is going to get them. Now, I don't want to mention any of the programs, but if you look at the new spring lineup on any one of those channels, you'll see that there are way too many, in my opinion, shows dedicated to showing animals attacking people. And the reason I have a problem with it is it's kind of a misrepresentation.
I agree.
You know, yes, those stories are true, but the
ooh, we're going to get a carrot.
Yeah, you know, and he will eat it. I'll go over there and he'll eat it. So the chances of being attacked by one of these animals, if, you know, you're not foolish, you know, a lot of people will feed an animal, whether it be a bear or an alligator, and that is a bad idea, obviously. But if you're smart when you're in bear country or, you know, wherever it is where there's dangerous animals down in Florida with alligators, you know, your chances of being attacked are almost zero. It happens, yes. I'd be lying to you if people, you know, weren't attacked by animals even with no provocation.
Mm-hmm.
But for the most part, you know, you have a much, much, much better chance of being injured in a car accident on your way to the beach, as they say, than being attacked by a shark when you're in the water.
Yes, and some of the shows that you're referring to are overly sensationalized and give people
shock
the
value.
Wrong ideas, I know.
It's shock value. I understand. It brings in advertising
yes,
dollars. But
sure.
It does nothing more than what the movie Jaws did for the shark.
Right.
I mean,
exactly.
You know what happened, and it caused
yes.
people not to,
yes.
so.
Well, we're here to try and set the record straight.
Mm-hmm.
All right, well, let's say goodbye to Rex,
okay.
right? And let's bring in, we have a little bit more time.
Okay.
We have about 6 minutes, so maybe we can do two more.
Okay, yeah, that would work.
All right,
I'm going to bring an animal in that starts out, you when you purchase it, it's a golf ball, and then you end up with a Volkswagen, is what I say.
Uh-oh, wait a minute. Are you planning on putting a Volkswagen? Dave, the producer, may not be too happy if we...
I'm exaggerating, but now this is a perfect example of an animal that is completely harmless, but absolutely makes just as bad a pet as any of the iguanas or the alligators that we talked about, just because of its immense size.
Okay.
This guy, right, not only its immense size, but it had very special requirements to keep this alive. This is a sulcata tortoise from North Africa. Often misidentified or called a spurthide tortoise, which is a completely different species, but some people refer to this wrongly as that tortoise. It's the best way to refer it is a sulcata tortoise, which is part of the Latin name. This is a tortoise that literally is 1.2 to 2 inches in shell length when it hatches, and if you keep it in a large area, which is very difficult to do in this area because of the climate. It gets cold. These things need to be outdoors for part of the year to get the
UV
sunlight.
Sure, from Africa, you
mm-hmm.
said.
Yep. It can grow to over 150 pounds. It can live over 150 years. They're going to require a massive amount of food to sustain it. So I don't even understand. Well, this is just a terrible pet. I don't understand why they even legally sell these in the pet trade. What are you going to do with a tortoise? This is the third largest tortoise in the world. Only the Aldebaran tortoise and the Galapagos tortoise get bigger. So just the size alone should deter people from absolutely not having this as a pet.
And what is the difference between a turtle and a tortoise?
You know, it's kind of a generic. Tortoises okay. Generally live on land. They don't have the webbing on the feet. Obviously, turtles are more aquatic. These tend to be more herbivores, as I should say, as opposed to omnivores, which most aquatic turtles are, eat both plants and meat. So it's kind of a generic difference. You can call it whatever you want, turtle, tortoise. I'm not going to say you're wrong.
Okay. So, Dave, if obviously these tortoises are the not a recommended pet, mm-hmm. and somebody wants a turtle or a tortoise, are there any that you would think would be more responsible?
Sure. A Russian tortoise, which, you know, without knowing what species they are, they look very, very similar. In other words, you would probably not be able to tell much the difference between a smaller species as opposed to the big one. I would get the Russian tortoise, obviously, because it doesn't grow big. It eats the same foods. It's more manageable. You can get those as easily in the pet trade as you can a sulcata tortoise. So go with the species that doesn't grow as big. Box turtles, that's another mm-hmm. species that you know, I would recommend. And I'm only recommending them compared to this big tortoise.
I understand, and that's what we want to make the point, mm-hmm. compared to some of these that we have heard are not recommended. Well, we have just about 4 minutes left, so mm-hmm. do you have one more animal that you'd like to bring out?
Yeah, I'm going to let you hold some animals this time.
Okay, wonderful.
All right.
So, again, we are looking at some photographs here. You can click the purple Look While You Listen button to see all the different photographs. And this show will be archived later on, so you will be able to see this interview and the visuals. This is new for us here at Talk Zone, that not only will we have the auditory part of the show, but you'll have the visual. All right, so what's coming next?
All right, Chris, I'm going to let you, decorate Susan with this next, well, I should say animals, not animal, because we have several of them. But
okay.
We're going to let you hold some animals from three different rainforests around the planet. And
little snakes.
But I do have to say, a lot of people have the belief that because a python or a boa is small, that it is not dangerous. And, you know, mm-hmm. tell that to the two-year-old child that has this thing around its neck. These do not necessarily make good pets for kids. Very difficult to take care of. You need a...
Okay. I don't know if this will work on my headphones. Okay. So now we are not saying that everybody should do this.
Mm-hmm.
This is obviously a controlled environment.
It is.
And I like snakes.
Okay.
Now,
yeah.
I know some people don't at all. Hello there.
Well, I kind of clue the kids into what they're in for when I have them come up at the shows. But you actually were just holding an Australian carpet python. That's that black and yellow one. You also had a Brazilian rainbow boa, which is this reddish-colored snake. And then probably the most common python in the pet trade would be the ball python because of its smaller size.
Yes, I worked at Lincoln Park Zoo and we had a ball python.
Mm-hmm.
Now, of course, some people still do not know that snakeskin is not wet and slimy.
Nope, very dry, very
yes.
leathery. I compare it to the skin of a grapefruit or an orange. And the color pattern on all these are unique in that the black and yellow, again, this is the
beautiful.
Dappled effect. Looks like sunlight, shade, and shadow. This, obviously, this is actually what color that big Burmese python should have been, this brown color. It looks very much like the dead leaves, sticks, and bark on the forest floor. And the reason the rainbow boa gets its name is because if you take this outside under direct sunlight, each scale has microscopic ridges which refract light, causing this thing to glow. Every color in the rainbow, it's very beautiful to see, but unfortunately under these artificial lights, it doesn't really give off that effect.
Yeah, so all these are just lovely,
mm-hmm.
and later on you'll give me the names so I can add these photographs.
Sure, that's Stretch, because he's arboreal or part arboreal, so he likes to kind of reach up and grab things above him, so I named him Stretch. The rainbow boa is Prism, and the ball python is Rawlings.
Mm-hmm. Actually, they feel very, very nice. They're... it's a lovely texture. It's
mm-hmm.
smooth. And, of course, this is the animal in my intro I was referring to that it moves along on its ribs.
See, there you go. Now he's crawling on the microphone.
Well, at this point, we are out of time. My guests today have been many reptiles, and Dave DiNasso and Chris Borma of the Traveling World of Reptiles.
Susan, thank you so much for having us. It was an honor to be here, you know, spreading the word about, you know, reptiles and the fact that not all of them make good pets. So we appreciate the opportunity to talk.
You're very welcome. And you'll find all the links to the Traveling World of Reptiles website. And here, I want to make sure we don't hurt our little nose. And their Facebook page on the bottom of my page of photographs. If you want, you can contact Dave DiNasso about booking a show for your event or organization through going to his website. And again, for kids and parents who are thinking about owning a reptile, make sure you see those additional resources that are on the bottom of my page of photos at www.wildabovepets.net. Thank you so much, Dave and Chris, and thank you for listening today.